Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com. accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast coming to you from Montecito, California. And I am still loopy, man. I'm still recovering from COVID, about 2.5 weeks out now. I'm sort of in a cloud. It's so weird. Just like 75%. Physically, a little short of breath, but I've just got like this haze in my head going on. I don't know what's going on, but hopefully it'll get better. Every day seems to be just a tad better. If I say goofy stuff, don't blame me. I think it's probably a little bit of low oxygen or something like that. So like this interview with Tom Wheelwright I did today. This was actually my first interview that I did with anybody. Since the COVID diagnosis, it was a little weird. I knew I had written down everything I wanted to ask Tom, but I still felt kind of odd. Anyway, first podcast also since the inauguration. I'll just say that political differences aside and all the concerns for, taxes and all that business, I was relieved to see some order restored in the government last week. After all that insurrection stuff and all that, which I found very sad for America. And regardless of policy differences, et cetera, and all the war coming on the rich and all that business that we might be worried about, I do think that Biden is a guy who, has got a lot of integrity, he cares about his country, he's a guy that I feel like is a respectable human being and as a person who loves his country first above any party, I wish him well. I hope he can guide us through the difficult part of this history that we're in, with the death and destruction of this pandemic, the financial hardships that people are having, and, this crazy hyperpolarization and partisanship that we haven't really seen, I think, in this country probably since the Civil War, which I think is very, very sad. But anyway, it's my sincere hope that this president will help, help bring a new national discourse. We're not going to agree on things, but hopefully we can stop being quite so hateful. And maybe it's unrealistic, though, to think that, that genie can go back in the bottle after all these, this world that we live in now with the sound bites and gotcha moments and all that. But I think we're capable, and I certainly know you guys are as a community. You're smart and you're good people, and I'm hoping that at least we as a community can make an effort to tone things down. I mean, there's people with a lot of different opinions even within our group, but I think it's nice to see people just ratchet it down and try to have respectful conversations with one another instead of the hate. So, with that being said, this show today is an important one. This is a show that really is probably going to be, probably one of the more important shows to you because it's really talking about what the tax implications are of this the administration and what's going on. And of course, there's no one better to talk to on this topic than my CPA, Tom Wheelwright. And when we come back, we're going to get Tom on the show and talk about what's going to happen next and potentially over the next 4 years. We'll be right back.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast, of course, is no one new to the show. He is well-known. His name is Tom Wheelwright. He's my CPA. He's the author of Tax-Free Wealth, and is a guy who we really probably want to talk to right about now, given our new tax situation that we have and the new government. So, Tom, welcome back to Wealth Formula Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Buck. Always good to be with you guys.
Well, listen, I want to make sure we get right into it because this is a show that I've been wanting to do. As soon as the election happened, particularly the Senate election. And so let's get into it right away. I mean, we have now obviously a Democratic president. We have both the House and the Senate going to the Democrats. So what does this all mean? Like what happens now?
Interesting question, because we have to remember that we actually have two branches of government that are in that impact severely taxes. One is the legislative branch, which is the one we always think of, you know, that's Congress, that's the Senate and the House. And we're going, well, in Congress, how much can they do when they have a 50-50 split? And the answer is, we don't know, probably not much. They can only do one reconciliation bill a year with regards to taxes. So they get one bite at the apple this year. That's it. From a legislative standpoint.
Can you explain what that means, Tom? What is a reconciliation?
So what that means is normally they have to have 60 votes to pass a bill, okay, mm-hmm. in a tax bill. But in reconciliation, they can do it with 50 plus one. So they can do it without any Republicans as long as they got 100% of the Democrats. The challenge that they have, of course, in the Democratic Party is that they have three or four very conservative, fiscally very conservative Democratic senators, and to get all of them, and then if they don't get all of them, you know, McConnell has proven a very strong leader for his caucus. So I think it's unlikely that McConnell's going to, I think he can marshal his resources and say no new taxes. Okay. So I don't think the Republicans are going to vote for anything significant from a tax increase. So the Democrats are going to have to get all their ducks in a row. And the question is, can they? Now, they only get one shot at it, meaning that they only get one shot where a 50 plus one, because we include Vice President Harris, right? So 50 plus one gets them a tax bill. They only get one shot at that a year. So they really are going to have to look at what are they willing to do. And what can they do and get, and can they get all their Democratic senators on board? We know that Nancy Pelosi can get the House Democrats together. We don't know whether Chuck Schumer can get the Senate Democrats together.
You know, one of the questions there too is like, do they want to do something this that would be that aggressive right now, given the economy as well? I mean, that's got to be part of the question.
Well, it's an interesting question. Logic would say no, but yeah. We've already heard from Janet Yellen, who's tagged to be the new Treasury Secretary, and her statement was, we're going to raise taxes on the wealthy, and we're going to do it soon, and we're going to do it significantly. And that's the other side of that coin, right? Because if she's Treasury Secretary, remember, a lot of what President Trump was able to do was through regulations, right? He withdrew regulations, he rewrote regulations. There is actually a lot you can do. I mean, for example, we've seen what Commissioner Reddick has done, the IRS commissioner, with regards to conservation easements and captive insurance companies. And he's gone after them aggressively, right? And he's taken positions that I think are probably not what the law was intended to do, but he's been aggressive. I think that's going to be ramped up. Janet Yellen has indicated that she wants to tax the rich. Okay. So I don't know if that's because she doesn't make enough money. I don't understand that, but that she came out very aggressive right from the start. So what that means, what that says to me, Buck, is that I think they're going to be more aggressive than maybe people thought they would be.
So what are the, if you had to guess for this year though, what do you think, what can we expect? I mean, if you had to guess, I know it's a tricky thing, but do you think that we're going to see dramatic changes of any kind for high paid professionals into 2021, or some of the things that are just sunsetting and will kind of come back online in 2022?
Well, I think Buck, that we're going to see the Democrats certainly try. Okay. Yeah. And they're certainly, but there are certain things that are easier than others. One of the things that I think would be easy for them is to raise the top rate back to 39.6%. That's actually a hard one to argue against, frankly, from a policy perspective. Is it going to hurt the economy? Probably not. Okay. Is it largely symbolic? Yes. But that's one of the things they want to do, right? Is a symbolic increase. We're taxing more of the rich. We're not taxing over what they won't do. So this is key. You know, George H.W. Bush lost his election, his reelection bid, with the words, read my lips, no new taxes. And then he went ahead and signed a tax increase. Joe Biden has said, read my lips, no increase in taxes over 400,000. Okay. So I think we can be comfortable that there are not going to be any, at least overt, attempts to tax people who are making less than $400,000 a year in taxable income would be my guess. Okay. So that's something probably not going to, that's probably, we're probably pretty safe there. I think that the raising the top rate is perhaps likely, in my opinion, is more likely than most things. Interestingly enough, what I think is going to be back on the table is, and you'll be happy about this in California, Buck, is the deduction for state income taxes. The Democrats have been pushing hard on that. Pelosi has pushed hard on that. Of course, Schumer's from the East Coast. Pelosi's from the West Coast. They want that tax deduction back. So we may see some kind of a bill that increases taxes on the rich one place, but then gives back the state tax deduction.
Well, I would be happy about that one personally, since I see paying more state taxes than federal these days. But, you know, I do want to spend, you know, this a little specific, but, you know, it's such a major part of our investor group strategy, you know, the concept of bonus depreciation, Tom, you know, you've been advocating for years now, especially since the Trump laws have changed. And, you know, we've been using it. Your clients have been using it. We've been using it to the best we can in real estate in combination with cost segregation analysis and bonus depreciation. can you, maybe if you could you talk a little bit about where you, what you think is going to happen there? Obviously that has been a huge, you know, benefit to many real estate investors. Maybe if you could start with sort of the context of what it used to be. Because it's not that bonus depreciation never existed. It was just something different than it was. It became something different, and perhaps it'll go back to what it was.
Well, we've had bonus depreciation for many, many years on new equipment. Okay. It was never unused, right? We actually used Section 179 for used equipment, and then bonus depreciation applied only to new. And then we also had, you know, it's been up and down from 50% to 100%, right, on new equipment. We are, but by the way, we're one of the few countries in the world that hasn't always allowed 100% deduction for equipment, new equipment. Okay, that's very common throughout the world, a deduction for new equipment. What we're unique in is allowing a bonus depreciation for used real estate. That's a unique position. In fact, most countries don't even allow any depreciation for used real estate, and we're allowing bonus depreciation. So what we used to have is, we used to have basically four rates for depreciation. We had basically a 3% rate, approximately somewhere between 2.5% to 3% for the building. We had a 0% rate, of course, for the land. We had a 5% to 10% rate for the land improvements, like landscaping and driveways and so forth. And then we had a 20% rate for the contents of the building, like ceiling fans and, you know, connect washer dryer, that kind of stuff. So that's historical. So I've always been a fan of cost segregation, as you know. There's still, that's never going away, right? We're always going to be able to do that, I think. I do think that they're going to be hard pressed to remove bonus depreciation for real estate without severe impact on the market. I mean, think about it. Right now, we've got so much pressure on landlords because of the eviction restrictions, right? Mm-hmm. And if they were to then say, well, you don't get bonus depreciation, I think that would be devastating. Right. To the economy. I think that'd be devastating. So I know Biden's talked about it. So we'll see if they're aggressive. I'm not sure that they'll be able to get their 50+1 votes on that one.
Yeah. And so in that regard, we may have the rest of the year, because that one naturally, that expires at the end of this year anyway, doesn't it?
What happens is at the end of 2022. So we have 2 years.
Oh, okay.
The end of 2022, it starts decreasing every year. Okay. So we go back to where it was at 2025, but it's actually around for quite some time now still.
Let me ask you a logistical question here that I feel like it's come up a number of times, because, you know, at any point, you know, any of these reconciliations or, you know, new laws can be, you know, taken up into Congress, and at what point do they count? In other words, say, for example, we have a real estate opportunity and we close on it in the next 60 days. And do we, you know, the law still says we can take bonus depreciation. Is there a reason to think that we wouldn't be able to take the bonus depreciation in 21? Because of a law change, you know, 2 months later?
So that's a great, great question. What we're looking at is the effective date. What's the effective date of the law? Right. So what we normally see is, we don't normally see an effective date prior to when the legislation was first proposed. Okay. So it hasn't been proposed yet, right? Yeah. Let me give you an example. So in 2017, right, we got that bill at the end of 2017, December of 2017. But remember, the bonus depreciation was retroactive to September 27th of 2017. Why September 27th? Because that's the day they announced they were looking at this new law. Okay. It's really bad tax policy to take it back to the beginning of the year. you know, Biden and the Democrats, President Biden and the Democrats are very much after taxing the rich. That this is a big policy for them. And if they see bonus depreciation in real estate as a way to tax the rich, which they may, okay, then they might try to make it retroactive to the beginning of the year. I just don't think they, I don't think they can get the 50 plus one votes. I think that would be really tough to think they could. And to get the, and to get people in Congress to vote to make it retroactive, it's such horrible tax policy. I'd be very surprised to see that happen.
Yeah. So at least for now, I think if you're, you know, just trying to plan your way through this year, it would seem to me that the smart thing would be to try to, you know, try to weigh as much early on as possible. I mean, just as a strategy, trying to, you know, if you're sort of a betting person, try to get your bonus depreciation.
You make a good point, Buck, because, you know, normally, like last year, we're going, does it matter if I invest from a tax standpoint? Does it matter if I invest in January? Do I need to invest in January? Can I wait till December? And the answer is, well, with bonus depreciation, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So we could absolutely wait and kind of wait and see what happens. But right now, you're absolutely right that, you know, investments that are done in January are unlikely to be pulled back if there is legislation undoing bonus depreciation. You make a really good point.
Yeah. And that's probably something that people ought to be thinking about. I know, I mean, I certainly am. And we had to start thinking about trying to weight heavily, you know, if we're going to invest anyway, I mean, just know that you have a better chance of some savings if we do it early. What do you think, you know, there's obviously some things that have always been, they've been controversial for years. You know, some of the conservation easement type things, and obviously various types of self-insurance. Do you think that these things at some point, what do you think happens to some of the, I mean, you take something like easements, and I know it's not something that we talk about too much, but you look at something like that, there has been such this, like, you know, a question of, you know, it's not illegal. It's hated by the IRS, but now there's an element of it that also involves conservation, which is something that the Democrats seem to be into. How do you see some of these things playing out? I mean, do you, at the very least, do you think we get some definitions and some true, you know, some true guidelines as opposed to just guessing, you know, what the risk is?
Well, I think what we could see is, again, regulations that would limit how they're used. Okay. I don't think the law is going to change because, like you say, that both the Democrats and the Republicans like conservation easements.
Right.
They both like them because from a Democrats, it's a conservation. From Republicans, it's, okay, this is, you know, this is a charitable contribution. This is a, you know, there's economic benefits here. So they both like them. The challenge, of course, is that there has been abuse. There's no question there's been abuse, sure, right? Sure. I mean, I've seen like 20-to-1 valuations, 25-to-1 valuations. Yeah. Going, these are ridiculous valuations. Unfortunately, the place they really should be dealt with is in the courts, right? They shouldn't be dealt with by the IRS and they shouldn't be dealt with by Congress, really. They should probably be dealt with in the courts as to just the valuation side of it. I think, though, that what we're more likely to see than legislation in the conservation easement area is we're more likely to see restrictions from a regulation, from a regulatory standpoint. That's one, again, where Janet Yellen could say, look, we're going to write regulations. We're going to let those regulations go to court. Maybe in the meantime, Congress will pass something, but we're going to do what we can do to restrict them from a regulatory standpoint. And I think from a, you know, the captive insurance, the self-insurance has the same issues because remember the origination of captive insurance is for farmers, right? Yeah. Farmers and ranchers, because they have so much risk that they cannot otherwise insure. And it's interestingly because it was Senator Grassley who's been going after conservation easements and captives, and yet he's the one that got them in the law in the first place. Yeah. So it's a little, you know, it's a little difficult to understand where they're going. I think, though, again, what they're trying to do is to prevent abuse. And I think that that, again, will come through regulation.
Well, what's interesting, too, on the I'll say on the captive insurance side is we, even though we have a Democratic president and Congress now, we actually have a conservative Supreme Court. And there's some cases that revolve that are involved in the Supreme Court, specifically with captive insurance, isn't there?
There is a case right now that we're waiting for a decision from the Supreme Court. It's been heard by the Supreme Court. We're waiting for a decision any day now from the Supreme Court. And that really relates to if you're in a captive, if you have a captive, do you have to file a form 8886? That's really what that revolves around. Right. Did the IRS go through the proper mechanism to make that a requirement? And if not, then that means that they have a hard time tracing it, right? So it makes enforcement that much tougher. But yeah, I mean, we're waiting on that court case, on that decision any day now.
I want to shift a little bit, I think, just sort of on these specific things we've been talking about, because I think that, you know, overall, there's always a little bit of a doom and gloom from the financial perspective, certainly, when you have everything shifting towards a Democratic government. But, you know, the other perspective on this that I've certainly thought about, and I'm curious about what you think, is, you know, this is a government, this is an administration that wants to do some big things too, specifically as it relates to, you know, probably the environment, the Green New Deal, the infrastructure, and all of that. And it would seem to me that along that lines, we have probably some things to look forward to as well. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit sort of, you know, on a historical perspective on what your view is, you know, with these kinds of movements and how ultimately, you know, do they end up benefiting us as taxpayers?
Well, so the first one, the conservation is and the climate is really, I think, one of his number one things after coronavirus. I think that's his number one issue. And that's good. Actually, I think that's actually good news.
Yeah.
For investors, because one thing we know for sure is that no politician is ever going to give up any power they have. And the tax law as a way to incentivize something is very powerful. And so I would see that there's going to be there. We know that President Biden's already talked about this, talked about on the campaign trail that he wants to incentivize green energy. Mm-hmm. Right? He wants to incentivize renewable energy, wants to incentivize electric cars. He wants to bring back full credits for solar, for example, and going back to the 30%. And so I think we're going to see that. I actually think that's where I'm looking from a real estate standpoint. Yeah. Okay. Is that the real estate opportunities are really going to be in housing and in energy. Okay. That's where the real estate's going to be. I think commercial is going to be in terrible. I mean, commercial real estate's just, I mean, office, et cetera. We know because of the virus that people haven't been going to the office. And so I think the office, commercial office space is going to be challenging that segment of real estate. But I think that the segment for multifamily, I think we might see more in the low income housing area. We might see more we certainly will see more in solar and other renewable energy areas. So I do think we're going to see some incentives going that way. And it might be those incentives offset the increase in the taxes to the wealthy, and they might come in at the same time, and that's how they might convince people to vote for that bill.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, I think this thematically goes back to our whole philosophy here, which is ultimately, yeah, I mean, you're going to get hurt in this economy if you're unfortunately, if you're a high W-2 wage earner, you got nothing else going on, right? But, you know, if you can make yourself a little bit more sophisticated financially, you have an opportunity here potentially to win. And I think that's an ongoing theme. Don't you think that's true?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. There's a, I was listening to our friend, Robert Kiyosaki, right? He was doing his radio show, and he was talking about green energy, and his guest said, American Tucson was his guest. And he said, look, the socialists are going to pay for the green energy and the capitalists are going to profit from it. The entrepreneurs are going to profit from it. So there's always huge opportunity. And certainly when there's a shift, a shift is an opportunity from an investment standpoint, but you're absolutely right, Buck. I think that the high income earners are going to get hit harder and harder and harder. The deeper we go into this administration.
Right. Tom, I want to thank you again for being on Wealth Formula Podcast. I think, you know, overall, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think we're going to be fine, but I do appreciate your perspective and obviously love having you on all the time. So.
Oh, I appreciate that. Hey, can I mention one other thing that came out in this last stimulus bill?
Oh, of course.
May not have paid attention to.
Yes, please.
We now for the next 2 years have 100% deduction for meals, for business meals. So this is another example, Buck, where if you're an employee, you get hammered. And if you're in a business owner, you reap the rewards. No employee can ever deduct their meals. But a business owner now, instead of just deducting 50%, even carryout, Buck, gets to be deducted at 100% as long as you have the business purpose and meet all the other tests. So again, another reason to be a business owner, be an investor, and one more deduction that's been given to us for the next 2 years.
Well, I'll drink to that. And just one reminder too for everybody. Of course, Tom has, everybody needs good CPA help, and I highly recommend you go to check out Tom's network. It's WealthAbility and WealthAbility.com, right, Tom?
That's right. Thanks so much, Buck. I really appreciate all your support over the years, because I know that you're most interested in helping your listeners and your investors build wealth, and you do a great job of that.
Absolutely. And you know, a big part of that is all about, you know, planning on keeping your money. It's not just what you make. So anyway, Tom, again, thanks again for being on Wealth Formula Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks very much, Buck.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hopefully it wasn't too loopy for you there and you got something out of it. I think the thing that from the perspective of what you can carry forward, in my opinion, from this show as an action step is, you know, I would invest heavily now. I mean, I think what you're, if you want to get into more opportunities, you know, where you have depreciation, particularly multifamily real estate opportunities, you know, even in even our ATM stuff right now that we've got going on through WFVelocity.com, these are the things where you can, you know, you might have ordinarily have waited later on in the year, but if you want to use this opportunity to wait time, it might be good to, you know, to get into those things earlier and invest more earlier in the year in hopes of, you know, avoiding some of these tax law changes. So that to me is a big takeaway. Anyway, other than that, I just want to take a moment again, just be do my part, and as a public service announcement, you know, I just want to take this chance again to urge you to be careful out there with this COVID stuff. You know, this thing really beat the heck out of me. I'd hate to see it do the same for you. Amazed at how many horror stories you guys have sent me about perfectly healthy people dying within days of this disease. So I don't want that to be you guys. And if not for you, do it for your neighbor. You know, one of the things that it's really hard for me to understand is how wearing a mask and not wearing a mask has become such a political issue. I would just like to point out that our veterans, you know, gave up their lives for fellow Americans. And all we're really doing right now is we have the same number of people dying COVID-19 as we had casualties in World War II. And in that regard, is it so much to wear a mask, right? You're not having to give your life up. Anyway, certainly easier than going to war, right? Anyway, that's my PSA topic for the day, and I'm going to leave it at that. Again, I apologize that I'm so kind of loopy and all over the place these days. Hopefully I will be back in my normal mind soon, but at least we've got some good tax information in the meantime. This is Buck Jaffrey with Wealth Formula Podcast signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Jaffrey here from Save You with Buck Jaffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.